Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Thanks so much for being here with us on this day after Thanksgiving here in the United States. If you're not in the United States, everyone in America is recovering today. And it's a great day. The day after Thanksgiving is one of the greatest days of the American on the American calendar because the refrigerator is full of leftovers and the dishes are clean now. At least probably most places the dishes are clean now. Not everywhere. Maybe not at my house. I don't know. But you get to just enjoy those leftovers and recover from giving thanks to God the day, because we give thanks so with such enthusiasm here in the United States. I have no idea why, but giving thanks involves eating pumpkin pie and apple pie and turkey and stuffing and watching football. And I'm sure God is feeling good about it today, that he got thanked so heartily yesterday by all of America. But I love this day because it's a nice day to relax. It's a family day. It's usually a lower key family day. And lots of good stuff happens on this day around America. And we'll have a little bit of a lower key show for you today, because we know that you're still digesting a lot of what went on yesterday. And so we're going to have a 2 hours of wonderful conversation about film. We'll talk about some of the movies this year. We'll talk about Christmas movies. We'll talk about faith in the movies, all of that. And we have a wonderful guest to help us do that on this day after Thanksgiving. Andrew Petiprin is our guest. He's a former Episcopal priest and the author of a book called Truth Matters, Knowing God and Yourself, and some forthcoming books that I do want to talk about this hour. He came to full communion with the Catholic Church with his wife and children on January 1st, 2019, and he's a lifelong Christian, a Marshall Scholar at Magdalen College in Oxford from 2001 to 2003, and a former fellow now at the Word of Fire Institute. Andrew Petiprin, thanks for being here with us.
Glad to be with you, Cy.
The book I really want to mention is Popcorn with the Pope, A Guide to the Vatican Film List, which, as far as we know, is out today. You could probably go to the Word on Fire website or to Amazon and get it today. We're not absolutely sure, but it's probably out today.
It is out, and I want to recommend it to everybody. It's a wonderful little book. I worked on it with two co-authors, David Paul Baird and Father Michael Ward. The three of us collaborated on this book that is, I think, unlike anything people have seen, but I think something people are going to want to snap up. It makes a great Christmas present, especially for people who like movies and who take their faith seriously. And what it's about is this thing called the Vatican Film List. A lot of people don't even know that it exists, but in 1995, Pope St. John Paul II, or people who sort of worked with him, worked for him at the Vatican, issued what was then just called Some Important Films. It was just a sheet of paper that said Some Important Films, and it had 45 movie titles on it. And the movie titles, some of them are very familiar. Some of them are things like The Wizard of Oz, It's a Wonderful Life, 2001 A Space Odyssey, popular movies like that, Chariots of Fire, those kinds of popular movies, but some of them are very obscure. They're European movies, they're foreign films, but they all have a great deal of theological, philosophical, moral, just kind of inspiration embedded in them. And it's a really cool moment for the church, which if you dig back a little bit in history, just in the 20th century, the popes were really wrestling with what to make of film as an art form.
And given what was being put on film, that seems like a perfectly good thing to be wrestling about.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Pope Pius XI was actually the first pope to really have to confront the problem of the potential that film could corrupt, that you can put visual images on the screen in a more powerful way than had ever been possible in the history of art. And so he was really wrestling with this in the late 1920s and early 1930s. But you fast forward a couple of decades to Pope Pius XII, and he realizes by this point that film is not just a diversion, that it isn't just a bread and circuses kind of situation. It isn't just something that people are going to engage in for their basest, entertainment experiences, yeah. although they can certainly do that.
Right.
So he begins thinking, he gives this great speech to a group of filmmakers, and he lays out a series of principles that he called an ideal film. So right there in the 1950s, you see the church like really beginning to take very seriously the potential for film to edify and actually to embrace some of the deepest questions that we need to think about in our faith. Fast forward another 40 years, we get to John Paul II, whom we know was an artist himself. He was an actor. He wrote plays. He loved art. And there in the 1990s, he issues this, or his people issue this list of films. Now, it's been around for a long time, this list, and people have known about it. And every once in a while, if you kind of Google it or, you know, do a little internet search, you'll see that people have commented on it here and there. I've done a little bit of that myself. But there's never been, in the English language anyway, a comprehensive book, a commentary on each of the films that's pitched to a popular audience. And so this is the project that that Father Michael Ward and David Baird and I embarked upon, that we wanted to put in the hands of people who liked films and took their faith seriously, a guidebook. And it's full of really beautiful color still images from the films and these essays that we've written, along with study questions in case groups want to use it, maybe for like a film club, like a Catholic cinema club.
How cool.
Yeah, so it's just a really wonderful book. I'm really proud of it, and I definitely would just encourage everybody listening to go to Word on Fire or wherever they get their books and pick it up.
Sounds like a perfect Christmas gift, since people are doing their Christmas shopping now, for that Catholic film lover in the family. Popcorn with the Pope, A Guide to the Vatican Film List. Now, you said it started out as a list of 45 some important films. Is it still 45, or I assume they've maybe added some films to it since then.
Amazingly, they have not. Have not added anything. It's frozen in time, 1995. And you just think of all of the films that have been made since 1995, which could be on that list. Now, some of them, you know, there might be some discussion, some controversy about what films might make it on there. But it's been a wonderful period of cinema. And yeah, there's some of us out there who really hope that sooner or later the Vatican might create an addendum or a second part or something so that we can see what else we should go and watch.
Well, you would think Pope Francis would. He's all about this engagement and with the culture and all that. Come on, Pope. I'm snapping my fingers to get the Pope moving. That's he responds to that. I don't know why. Let me just ask you this. Some important films, 45 films, middle 1990s. Any Elvis films on there?
No.
Not
there
a
no
single
Elvis
film. Really?
No Elvis films. I'm sorry to say, no Doris Day films. No, none of those. But there are some popular ones. Wizard of Oz, as I mentioned before, but not some of the real pop culture ones.
Okay, so since it's the day after Thanksgiving, let me just ask you about Thanksgiving movies, because we are going to talk about Christmas movies. Always, I mean. Is it still this way? Actually, you know a lot more about movies than I do, but is it still the case that it used to be kind of like there were summer movies, there was Christmas movies, and then there was just kind of everything else? You know, that is that still the case, that the summer blockbuster, the big Christmas movies, and then there's everything else?
Those are kind of the two big marketing categories for movie theaters. I mean, they definitely want big summer blockbuster movies, action films, superhero films, all that kind of thing. And then there's kind of the holiday season, as they call it, of, you know, the kinds of movies that you're going to take the family to go and see when you have a little bit of free time, when you're taking some time off. But, you know, in terms of like the themes of the movies, there are like real summery type movies for sure. And there are really Christmassy movies. There are so many Christmas movies, as we know. But there aren't a lot of Thanksgiving movies. There are a lot of scary movies, and we can put those maybe in the category of like Halloween movies. There are a lot of those. But it, funnily enough, for as important as the Thanksgiving holiday is to American culture, there aren't a ton of movies that really highlight the importance of Thanksgiving in the lives of Americans. There are movies that have scenes that feature Thanksgiving. I mean, even a movie like Rocky, for example, has a significant scene set on Thanksgiving. You know, there are various movies that have scenes set at Thanksgiving, but the movies aren't really about Thanksgiving. So it's interesting to find the few that are out there and see what they're like.
All right, well, we have to take our first break, and we will do that when we come back. We'll take a look at some Thanksgiving movies, and then we're definitely going to talk about the movies of this year. So some fascinating conversations to come from Andrew Petiprin as we go, but I don't want to give the impression that we're going to do a comprehensive, these are all the films that are coming out at Christmas time that you can see. We're probably not going to do that, although I will ask you some of what's coming out. But we'll review some of the big movies of the year. Some of the, no, it's even better, important, some important films from the year. None of them involving Elvis Presley. We'll be right back and continue our film conversation from a faith perspective with Andrew Pettiprin on Catholic Answers Live.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Hi, I'm Debbie Giorgiani. Adam Bly and I invite you to join us as we tackle the spirit world on EWTN Radio. Adam has assisted at thousands of solemn exorcisms and resolutions of hauntings. He also reaches out to educate people on the paranormal and the occult in our culture. Join us tomorrow at 11 a.m. Eastern for the spirit world on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Andrew Pettiprin, our guest. We're talking about faith and film on a nice day to do that, a day where we get to relax a little bit more. Hey, maybe you're driving and you're catching us and you've never caught us before. A lot of times this is the first time people get to hear us is on a holiday like this because you're not at work like you usually are. And I just want to let you know, you can find out all about us by going to Catholic.com. Catholic Answers Live is a production of Catholic Answers, which is an apostolate devoted to explaining and defending the Catholic faith. It's in Southern California. And we'd love it if you'd get to know more about us. Maybe we'd get onto your podcasting list for this show or one of the other podcasts that we do. Go to Catholic.com to find out all about it. Andrew Pettiprin has written a book called Popcorn with the Pope, A Guide to the Vatican Film List. It's out. It has no Elvis movies in it, but it's still a really, really good book. Did you maybe think of maybe just getting some pictures of Blue Hawaii and putting them in there because they're beautiful pictures?
Yeah, we thought maybe just putting Elvis on the cover would be like Elvis shaking the hand of the Pope or something like that might have been the right move, but we couldn't get the rights, so we didn't do that.
It never happened. You know, Elvis never toured in Europe. Did you know that?
I know. Well, I know that from watching the Elvis movie, actually, that dastardly Colonel Parker kept him from his dream of touring the world.
Yeah, that's right. Colonel Parker, Tom Hanks. I don't know who that guy was that played Elvis, but he did a good job in that movie.
I thought he was Elvis. I just really got mesmerized. I just forgot that I wasn't really looking at Elvis.
Since we're on that, Baz Luhrmann makes these crazy movies with incredible sets and light. I love it. Is there something wrong with me that I love Baz Luhrmann movies?
No, not at all. I think Baz Luhrmann makes really, really good movies. There are very few directors that make movies kind of as big and interesting in terms of spectacles as Baz Luhrmann. Right. So I think we should be grateful. He's kind of a throwback to an earlier age where, you know, filmmakers were making these big, exciting things.
And he's intentionally a throwback because he makes movies about things that happened usually earlier in the 20th century. What was the one with what's the William Faulkner? Not William Faulkner. What's that movie that everybody, Leonardo DiCaprio was in it.
Oh, yeah. Romeo and Juliet.
Not Romeo and Juliet. No, William Faulkner didn't write it. That's not even an American author. But I have utterly confused this question now because I completely baffled myself on it. But for some reason, my senior brain cannot focus on, it's a movie where a guy, he gets rich, but he's low class, but he...
Oh, yeah. Oh, you mean...
oh, did I do it? Yeah. I gave you the mind
Gatsby.
Virus.
The Great Gatsby.
I thought, now, who forgets The Great Gatsby? That's how old I am, Andrew. I can't even remember The Great Gatsby. I loved that movie. I thought he did a great job with that movie. Fantastic.
Yeah, the look of that movie is really something. I think it really captures the spirit of the jazz age.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, okay. I don't know why I got off track, but... That's not hard to do with me, especially talking about movies. I like movies a lot. I like going to the movies. There's no one in my family. My wife and I raised three children, and none of them enjoy going to the movies with me. Maybe it's me. I don't know. But I love to go sit in a movie theater and watch a movie.
I do too. I'm really hopeful that movie theaters are going to continue to exist and thrive. I know we have so many options for watching movies at home now, but I just don't think there's anything like the experience of going to the movie theater. And, you know, I've noticed, I don't know if you have too, Si, that a lot of big movies that are coming out are being presented, they're being kind of advertised as you need to go to the movie theater to see them, because yeah. it won't be the same experience if you just try to watch it at home.
Right.
And I noticed this summer, you know, one of the movies we might talk a little more about was Mission Impossible. And Tom Cruise came on the screen along with the director, Christopher McQuarrie, at the beginning of the film and basically said, "You've come to the right place. You've got to watch this on a big screen. Thank you. We made this movie so you could watch it this way."
Oh, good for
and
them.
I thought it was great.
Yeah, that is great. Good. And we are going to talk about that movie. We're going to talk about millions of movies with you. I hope you're prepared to discuss millions of movies.
I've seen a couple million. So, yeah, let's.
You've seen a couple million movies? Good for you. Oh, that is good.
Well, I doubt that very much. No, I have not.
Did you ever see anywhere Elvis plays a race car driver?
I think so.
How about a water skier? How about a surfer?
Yeah.
How about it?
Yeah.
He did all of these things.
I know. I forget the names of all of those, but I think we have a box.
He forgets
set
the
of
name. He
DVDs.
Forgot the name of yeah. them as soon as he made them, but they are good. All right. I want to ask you about Thanksgiving movies, but before that, okay, parents watching movies or sending their kids to the movies used to have, I think it was called the Legion of Decency. Do we have mm-hmm. that anymore? Is there anything like that anymore?
The Legion of Decency, as it once was, doesn't exist anymore. It stopped rating movies officially back in the early 1980s. However, there are still through, I forget what it is. I believe if you check out the National Catholic Register, there are through there you can look at the kind of suitability of films. They're not rated in the same way as they once were, as being kind of condemned or no. You know, as the old system was set up. But there are still places to go. Actually, including if you go to IMDb, the Internet Movie Database, and you look up specific films, it will tell you specific things that you might be worried about. Like it will tell you like the kind of nudity that there might be, or the kind of foul language that might be, like more than just the blanket, more than just the
helpful.
Blanket rating. Yeah. So there are places to go so you can find out whether a film is really right for your family.
Yeah. Cause have you ever gone to like a PG movie or a PG-13 movie and you're like, that's what they think a kid should watch. Like
yeah,
sometimes
weird.
You're like, what are they thinking? All right. I want to talk about a particular movie that was condemned by the Legion of Decency. And it makes me miss the Legion of Decency because they did such a good job in their evaluation of movies. They condemned Miracle on 34th Street, which clearly should be a condemned movie. I don't even know why we keep prints of that movie around.
Yeah, that's a funny one, isn't it?
Yes,
Miracle on 34th Street, which is an interesting film. It is, first of all, a Thanksgiving film because it begins at the New York Thanksgiving Day parade, but
oh,
then obviously
right. yeah.
turns very much into a Christmas movie. And I remember watching that movie many times as a kid. It was just on TV a lot, and you know, there's kind of a sweet ending. But my understanding is it was condemned by the Legion of Decency for a couple of reasons. One is that the protagonist of the film, who's played by Maureen O'Hara, is divorced. And and at the end of the movie, she, we presume, gets married to Mr. Gailey, the male lead in the movie. And, you know, there's no talk of kind of the religious significance of the fact that she's divorced.
Oh.
And, you know, so I think that that's one of the reasons. You know, one of the other reasons may just be that the film itself is just so focused on Santa Claus and not really on anything else related to kind of the faith importance of Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
you know, that movie came out in 1947. So it may just, you know, some of the films on the list are kind of strange choices, and you just, there must have been a lot of like both human strength and human error that went into evaluating what should get that C rating, the condemned rating. But Miracle on 34th Street got one. Nowadays, it's actually not one of my favorite Christmas movies anyway. I don't love that movie, but I am a little nostalgic for it from time to time because I did watch it a lot growing up.
Yeah, I have to say, I remember watching it growing up, but I have not had the feeling of I got to go back and revisit that movie. But and I don't know about kids. Like, can you show kids black and white movies, or do they just feel like you're torturing them if you show them a black and white movie these days?
Well, so that... I'm pleased to say I have formed, I have evangelized my children
for the love
of black and white movies. But I'll tell you, Si, when I spent a few years as a high school teacher, and I used to show my students movies, and if it was black and white, it didn't even occur to me that they would object to it. But if it was black and white, the first few times I did that, I mean, they just all moaned, and they couldn't even believe it, that they would be subjected to something like that.
Isn't that amazing? It's amazing to think of that. The technology goes along, and at a certain point, a thing is just marked as did Shakespeare make this himself? Like, this is ancient. Like, how old is this? By the way, if you're a young person, there are some truly great movies that you will love if you watch them in black and white. All right, let's talk about some Thanksgiving movies since it's the day after Thanksgiving. By the way, you're trained in theology and all that. Are we actually thanking God when we're watching football and eating pie? What's the relationship here between thanking God and watching football and eating pie?
Well, I think leisure is good. We work for the sake of being able to enjoy the gifts that God has bestowed upon us. So I think I think Thanksgiving and its aftermath are potentially very good for us to have an opportunity to rest from our labors and to give thanks for the gifts that we have. I think it gets a little dangerous if we are maybe turning to consumerism, or if we're just kind of, maybe using the time that we have off to maybe avoid having even more special experiences that we could be having with our family. If dad's just kind of all by himself, ignoring the rest of the family while the Cowboys are on, that might be a problem, but might not be. Maybe dad deserves a break in the chair, right?
The Cowboys are, what are you talking about? I'm not supposed to, all right. Parenting is hard, man. All right.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing though, is I say that I love this day because it's that, you know, it really is that, you know, the feast was yesterday. And there's a kind of enjoyment of the post-feast glow or whatever. But this is actually not a day that a lot of people enjoy because they have to work today. We've made it so that lots of people have to go into work on the Friday after Thanksgiving. And then we do this Black Friday thing. Is that that's kind of like, it's like Hunger Games for cheap TVs.
It is. I love the day after Thanksgiving, and I think everybody should have it off or take it off, because in our house anyway, we work really hard. My wife, you know, loves to cook, and she puts on a really beautiful Thanksgiving dinner for family or friends every year. And I don't know about you, Si, but I mean, as the man of the house, that's a lot of dishwashing for me. A lot of cleaning up, a lot of garbage.
I start early, man. I do it in shifts. I'd like, okay, this is the first stuff. Get this done because there's going to be a, yeah.
But I need a day to recover. You know, I mean, I enjoy Thanksgiving once we get to the table, but boy, I'm exhausted by the end of that day. It's a hard working day.
Yeah, that's actually true. That's true. It is a busy, hard working day. Yeah, a lot of times, I was going to make a dumb joke. I'm not going to make a dumb joke. All right. So the day after Thanksgiving, however, we might consider watching those Thanksgiving movies. So give me a couple of like really good. Do you have a couple? I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot. Do you have a couple of really good things that were not condemned by the Legion of Decency?
Yeah. Well, honestly, if you do a search for Thanksgiving movies, it turns up a lot of movies that I at least have either never seen or never heard of even. But the one that I would highlight is called Planes, Trains, and Automobiles from 1987. It was not condemned by the Legion of Decency because the Legion of Decency wasn't condemning movies in 1987.
On their job, clearly.
Maybe. This movie, though, I don't think is a movie that ought to be condemned, except it has one scene with some cussing in it. Otherwise, it is a movie that is about, it's a very powerful movie and touching movie. It's a hilarious movie. Absolutely roll on the floor laughing, funny.
Well, John Candy. I love Steve Martin and everything, but John Candy is a miracle. That guy is amazing.
Everything he was in, it just takes it up such a notch as far as humor. And I think this movie might be him at his very best. He plays this traveling salesman who always seems to be kind of imposing upon people, but in a way that most people find charming and friendly, but not his traveling companion, Steve Martin, who is just trying to get home from New York to Chicago to be with his family for Thanksgiving. And it's kind of a buddy picture in the end, even though they don't really like each other very much to begin. It's kind of a bro film where a couple of guys are on a road trip and every conceivable thing that could go wrong to them does. And yet they are able, not to spoil the movie, but they're able in the end to forge a real friendship, which is rare these days, especially for men. So it's a really beautiful movie. I love it.
All right. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, our first, rent it. You can rent it. It's probably on one of the services. I don't know where it is, but Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, first Thanksgiving movie suggestion. We'll get at least one more when we come back. Talking about film from a faith perspective with Andrew Petiprin today on Catholic Answers Live this day after Thanksgiving.
Why We're Catholic is the one book you can hand to anyone to invite them into or back to the Catholic faith. With more than 400,000 copies sold, Trent Horn's book has had a number one ranking on Amazon.com for 5 years running. Now available in softcover, bulk cases, ebook, and on Audible. Find out what the excitement is all about. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic at shop.catholic.com or visit whywearecatholic.com.
When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Are you scared to talk about abortion? Don't worry, almost everyone is. You can overcome this fear, as Trent Horn shows in the newly revised and expanded second edition of Persuasive Pro-Life. With a little knowledge and a few proven techniques, you can become a bold and effective apologist for life. Visit shop.catholic.com to order your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life and never again be afraid to speak up. Also available at good Catholic bookstores. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. We're kind of taking it easy today. I hope you're getting to take it easy. I think there was a wave of businesses being opened on the day after Thanksgiving. I think that wave is receding a little bit because people got negative feedback on it. But I know there are a good number of people who do have to work today, and sorry about that. It used to be better here in America as far as I don't know, man. Work. That's what we're about. And I'm sorry that some are working today. But if you get to be with us, we're glad, first of all, that you get to be with us. If you don't know about us, you can find out about us at Catholic.com. Catholic Answers is an apostolate about defending and explaining the Catholic faith. But we're going to take it easy a little bit today and just talk about movies. And we're having fun talking about movies with Andrew Petiprin, who has a new book out. You can get it at Amazon or on the Word on Fire website. It's called Popcorn with the Pope, A Guide to the Vatican Film List. We've already established, so don't call and ask, please, if any Elvis movies are on there. We've already established there are none. But, you know, no list is perfect. Let's just leave it there. No list is perfect. Right now, we're just taking a little discursus to talk about Thanksgiving movies. And the only American Thanksgiving movie like that you really feel like it's just a Thanksgiving movie is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
I think that is a great example of a movie that is about Thanksgiving. Whereas a lot of movies have little scenes of families around the table or something like that, but aren't really essentially about Thanksgiving. So honestly, that's the only one I've got to pitch to you is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
But I know you have another movie you want to talk to us about. Because I asked you about you know, feasting and relaxing and all that. And I know because I have it right here in front of me that you also want to talk about this other movie, which I think it's one of the top 10 movies ever made. I think it's one of the greatest movies ever made. But do you know what movie I'm talking about?
I'm not sure. I can't remember which one.
Blue Hawaii. Elvis's Blue Hawaii. Babette's Feast. I'm talking about Babette's Feast.
Yeah, let's talk about Babette's Feast. So that movie, the reason that I forgot about that one is that it's a Danish movie. So it has nothing to do with American Thanksgiving, but it is all about Thanksgiving. I mean, the movie is about a feast. It's about gathering a group of people together and serving them the greatest dinner of their life. And the result is a truly transformative experience. Now, the neat thing about it is it's not about Catholics at all. In fact, it is about Christians. They're very faithful Protestants. But the meaning that you take away from the movie couldn't be any stronger, that it's about a sustenance that is given to us by God that is greater than any food that we could eat in this world, namely the Holy Eucharist and the body and blood of our Lord. The character who's kind of the catalyst for this in the movie is the woman who prepares the dinner, this woman, Babette, who is French, and therefore she is Catholic, we presume, and she wears a crucifix, but she doesn't really talk about her faith. But she comes to work for these Danish sisters who are very dour, very serious. You know, they have nothing fancy at all about their lives. But they reluctantly let Babette, who wins the lottery, use her lottery winnings to put on this lavish feast for them. And so it's kind of, in a way, I mean, you can look at it almost like a Catholic is given the opportunity to evangelize some Protestants in her town.
It is kind of that, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, by sort of showing them. But at the same time, it's kind of an ecumenical movie because Babette has been the recipient of a lot of grace from these Protestant women over the years, because she's been allowed to live with them when she needed a place to go. So it's just a gorgeous movie about, and you just come away from the movie feeling so grateful to God for your own blessings. At least I do.
Yeah, and this is one where it comes from a short story, but it feels like something that it's film. Like the some things just work better on the page, and some things work better as film. And this one, because of the kind of presenting the food even as divine, as a window on the divine, as something that opens us up, it allows us to forgive people we couldn't forgive otherwise, allows us to engage in conversation with people we don't like. Something about film being able to communicate that, it does speak to film as an art form that has its place among the art forms.
I totally agree. I mean, what you can get in a film like that is everything that the beauty of the written word can evoke. You know, if you're reading about a feast, you can almost smell the food, right? But it also is able to evoke what a painting can do. Like if you look at a beautiful still life of a feast, it's right, mashing the two together and putting it in action. And what you get from it is just a sensory explosion. And I think not in a decadent way, in a way that I think is truly edifying and worth our attention.
Which brings up a basic kind of fundamental question about film, because certainly since the dawn of the film era, where people can go to watch movies. There's been a cultural decline in many ways. And so you when you see a movie like Babette's Feast, you realize what it can be because it has this incredible power to draw you into something that's almost real life. And so the artistic power, but that same power is mostly not used for good reasons.
That's right. Yeah, and this was actually something that Pope Pius XII talked about in the 1950s. There's a line in his apostolic exhortation that he made to these filmmakers where he talked about film as being great filmmaking is suited as a respite from the pressure of real existence. And he wanted filmmakers to really think of what they were doing in their craft as offering to people a place for relief, you know, a place where kind of the horrors and in, you know, indecencies and evils and all the things that we experience out there in the harsh world, that we can, you know, we don't want to just imagine that they don't exist, but we can transcend them a little bit with the power of art. And so he was really hopeful that film could do that, that it was uniquely suited as an art form to do that sort of thing for people who were at that time, I mean, in the 1950s, that was the entertainment option. That was, you know, that was right. What he did. You know, I think it's very insightful of him that he pointed that out. I think that power still exists today.
But, you know, you're a parent, you've been in church ministry for most of your adult life. How do we confront, and I mean, let's be realistic. The truth is that, first of all, many of the images that people are being, these motion picture images that people are being exposed to are degrading, not dignifying, like Babette's Feast. And we are, in fact, degraded by them. The you can see the evidence of it that you know, from the time the talkies started in 1929 to today, we don't see an edifying of culture. We see a degrading of culture.
Yeah, we do. And we have to be very careful. I think that one good thing is for us to have conversations like this, you know, to know that we are going to be exposed to things on our TV sets or movie screens or whatever it is. And so let's talk about what's worth our attention. You know, the other thing that I would say about that is I recently read this this speech that Pope Benedict XVI gave to artists during his pontificate. Now, a lot of people know about John Paul II wrote a document called The Letter to Artists, which is a really wonderful thing to look at. But Pope Benedict also talked about this. And he talked about the power of art to wake people up. And indeed, he even talked about it, that it oftentimes should shock you. Now, he didn't mean it shock you in the sense of like expose you to something that's going to scar you or traumatize you. But there are things that we see that maybe aren't easy to look at or aren't just, you know, just plainly on the surface, something holy and good for us, but they may provoke in us a kind of reflection that is ultimately going to be good for our souls. I think about maybe, for example, a filmmaker like Terrence Malick, or, you know, an earlier filmmaker like Ingmar Bergman, a Swedish filmmaker, who he made these like very difficult kind of serious movies, you know, and they contain things that are troubling at times. But boy, if you have the patience to get through those movies and can really process them, I think it really can spur some spiritual growth. So, you know, it's a tough question, and I don't have a perfect answer to it, but it's important to be vigilant, but also important to, you know, not just, you know, necessarily live in a cave, I would say.
Yeah, right. That because especially as a parent, because if you compel your children to live in a cave with you, it's not likely that their transition to adulthood will work well. Although I have known parents who are, I truly admire, who were much more restrictive, for example, than I was, and they were able to make it work. So I don't want to be like, no, you can't, you know, be, I don't be even very, very, very vigilant with your children, because people can do it. I've seen people do it. I've seen people pull it off, and it was good for their children. But there's some way in which we do also have to be realistic about the world that they're moving into. How are we going to make that possible for them to live in that world?
Yeah, and I think the key, I agree with you, Sai. I don't think that there's a magic bullet there. Like, different parents do have different strategies for what they let their children watch. But something that is important to me and to my wife is that we take an interest. You know, we love movies, we love TV. And so we don't ever want our kids to just be over there watching their thing. You know, like, we always want to be engaged and involved. Right. Now, there will be things that they are interested in and we're not really, but we want to make it clear to them, we want to be involved in knowing about it. And, you know, I'll ask our kids questions about the shows that they watch, even if they aren't shows that I personally want to watch, you know? And then on top of that is just to always try in your family to bring the question back around to, you know, okay, we're going to spend some, you know, you're going to spend some time watching SpongeBob or something like that. Well, that maybe isn't the most edifying thing in the whole world. Maybe it's not the worst thing in the world, but you know, that's just a silly example I pulled out of my head. Our listeners probably have better ones. But, you know, but to bring the question back around to what are we doing when we watch something? Like, who are we as people of faith when we sit down to engage in something, even something silly?
Yeah, yeah. I like the strategy. I mean, it's a communicative strategy, not just a disciplinary strategy. I mean, in our house, you could watch anything you wanted as long as it was Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. Do you think that was a good strategy, or do you think maybe that was?
Well, I mean, that's a niche policy, I suppose. As a family, your kids are
pick any show you want, kids, as long as it's Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. I don't know. All right, we're going to come back. We'll talk about some of the big movies of this year with Andrew Petiprin, the author of Popcorn with the Pope: A Guide to the Vatican Film List. Right back after this on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City. And you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
EWTN Heavenly Hints.
Instead of counting those sit-ups or swimming laps with a grunted 1, 2, 3 sequence, try counting with positivity. Use the Ten Commandments or the 9 fruits of the Holy Spirit, plus an amen, of course. Notice how much holier your workout can be when you give God His glory and count His victory.
A Heavenly Hint from EWTN.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I didn't know today was the feast day of Robert Bellarmine. I'm so happy to hear that. What a wonderful, wonderful saint he is, and a great intellectual hero. We're talking about film today, and we're talking about it with Andrew Petiprin. And Andrew Petiprin has a new book out called Popcorn with the Pope, A Guide to the Vatican Film List, a perfect Christmas book for the Catholic film lover in your home. You can get it on Amazon.com or go to Word on Fire. Go to their website over at Word on Fire and pick it up there. Andrew, you wrote an article earlier in the year about some contemporary films, and I want to get your take on these films. It's called The Bomb and the Babble of the Self. You published it in the Catholic World Report earlier this year. In it, you focused on 3 movies. Maybe you can just tell us what you were getting at in looking at these 3 films from the year 2023.
Yeah, the 3 films that most interested me this year, Cy, were, first of all, Christopher Nolan's long-anticipated biopic Oppenheimer, which was... not without controversy. It's one of those movies that I would not recommend parents show their children. It does have some very objectionable material in it, but it is also, to my mind, a very profound meditation on the hubris that we have as human beings in playing God, in our kind of technological innovation, in progressing to a place where we're now. We now really can't control what we have made. We now live in a world where the technology that we have invented to help us now controls us. And, you know, the atomic bomb is just a wild invention, you know, a weapon of war. But before it existed, it was the fruit of the labor of the most brilliant minds, scientific minds in the world. And Robert Oppenheimer was among the greatest of these men and women, mostly men, of this generation. And so I think what Christopher Nolan does in the film, in Oppenheimer, is really, really remind us of the, you know, the Spider-Man line about with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah.
Boy, that's just so important. You know, we see this in a movie like Jurassic Park too, where, you know, the question is not, can we do something, but should we do something? And, you know, so important stuff, I think, is really put on screen. I mean, it's just a technically flawless film as well. Just the way the acting from Cillian Murphy and the other actors in that movie, it's really one of those kind of once in a generation kind of big movie. As I said, not for everybody, definitely contains some objectionable material, but it really made a big impact on me this year.
Do you come away from the film, because I have to be completely honest with you, I've yet to see Oppenheimer. And not for lack of desire. I think I've it's just been a distracting year in some ways, and I haven't made it to a lot of films this year. But I mean, I'm a huge fan of Cillian Murphy. I think he's Irish. I think he's Irish. And the Irish, what is it? How they produce these actors who are just amazing.
Yeah.
And I really like Christopher Nolan's films. But do you come away from the film? Is it a message film, or is it a film that doesn't so much give you a message as a kind of challenge, you know, that challenges you to think through something? I guess because I'm not so much into the message films, because I feel like they're just the opposite of challenging. Like, okay, I got your message, thank you, Barbie.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to mention the horrible Barbie movie, but go ahead.
Right. I don't think it's a message film, and I'm really not interested in message films, Sai. Me, the beauty of cinema, like any great art form, is it's able to present things in the complexity that they deserve. Now, of course, we as Catholics can take away certain messages. We can think about things in particular ways, like, oh, you know, that's helpful, that's not, or whatever that may be. But I think to let the art speak for itself is really important. So no, I don't get the impression watching Oppenheimer that Christopher Nolan is trying to say any one particular thing. When, you know, it isn't meant to condemn outright the technology that went into creating the atomic bomb necessarily. It isn't meant to condemn outright any military decisions that have been made with that technology since then. You know, it's not really that kind of movie. It's a character study. It's about a man who is sort of driven towards what I think ultimately looks in his life like not a good end.
Ah,
you know, it's an end that almost has a kind of dark spiritual power.
Yeah.
That is something that we definitely all need to look out for in our own lives.
Yeah, that's a very modern thing. I mean, that's almost the way you speak about it, like, I think how many modern people must get to the end of our lives and go, why did I live it that way? Why did I do it that way? There's just so many kind of enticing, you know, you could chase your dream of building a bomb or starting a company, but then the why question is going to be there. Why did I pursue that?
One of the characters in the film is Albert Einstein, who tells Oppenheimer during the film something like, you know, you'll get to the end of all of this and you know what you'll get? You're going to get a reception with tuna fish sandwiches and a handshake, and you'll go home. You know, like ultimately, what's the reward that we get for the things that we do in this life? You know, even really important things. So, you know, it just kind of, if what you're doing with your time and your talent is creating something destructive, well, you know, your reward for it isn't going to be any different than if you did something, you know, much more modest and maybe good for the world, right?
All right. What about Asteroid City? I did see Asteroid City.
Oh, yeah. What did you think of Asteroid City?
I don't know. I have no idea what to think about Asteroid City. And I feel this very much with, who's the man that makes those movies? What's his name?
Wes Anderson.
Wes Anderson. I've seen other of his films, and I feel like they're very intellectual, and they're very distant from emotion, and I don't know what to do with those kinds of movies.
Yeah, they are. Wes Anderson movies are easily caricatured because he has a very particular aesthetic, mm-hmm. and the movies definitely appeal to kind of a heady audience to some degree.
Right.
However, I think that his movies also, especially his earlier movies, have a lot of heart to them. The Royal Tenenbaums in particular is a movie that I think is a very profound meditation on family and belonging, mm-hmm. and kind of one's purpose in life. Now, Asteroid City is a little bit harder to discern, and I have to admit I had to think about it a little bit before I was able to come up with really what I felt about it. But what I think about it is, and the reason that I put it in the same article with Oppenheimer, is I think it's a very interesting presentation of what life is like now that we live in this kind of scientistic age, where in a sense science, whereas in an earlier age, it wasn't that there wasn't such a thing as science, there was, but that we human beings lived in a more enchanted universe. We understood that we were creatures made by God and that our souls were destined to eternity and that sort of thing. Whereas nowadays we tend to put our trust and our faith even in science itself. And faith is something, religion, Christianity, Catholicism even, is something more personal and private. You know, it's something that just kind of belongs to the individual. And, you know, so I think that this film Asteroid City does a really interesting job painting the picture of these characters who are sort of lost in the world now. World War II is over. It's set in the 1950s. World War II is over. It's the first, the baby boomers are just sort of becoming teenagers and coming into their own. And they're trying to make sense of what they're on the planet to do. And so these young people in the movie are inventors. There's this kind of science contest that they've entered, and one of them makes a jet pack. One of them makes this thing that can project advertisements onto the moon so people can see them at night. And you know, you get the sense that these innovations, these inventions, are they serve a very practical purpose for a society that's mostly focused on things like wars and making money, and you know, kind of creating a condition of maybe creature comforts rather than, you know, creating the conditions where a person's soul could find its rest in God. So I found Asteroid City to be not everybody's cup of tea, but a movie that got me thinking a lot about important things.
Okay. All right. Very good. And then Mission Impossible was the third of the three movies from 2023 you thought it was worth talking about.
Absolutely. Mission Impossible was such a blast. I love the Mission Impossible franchise. I happen to be a fan of Tom Cruise as an actor. I know he's a bit odd in his personal life, but he's somebody who understands how to give audiences what they want. And it's not just the cheapest, basest stuff either. There is a lot of fun, a lot of action in all of his films and all the Mission Impossible films, but there's also a lot to think about. And in this one, you know, in each Mission Impossible film, there's some big problem that Ethan Hunt and his team have to solve. And in this one, it's artificial intelligence. And it's the first of a two-part series. There's going to be a second part to this latest Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning film. But I think that this character of Ethan Hunt and this team, this Mission Impossible team, they represent kind of the heroes that we need in this scientistic age, that these are guys who certainly are not averse to using technology and not averse to kind of even using violence sometimes to protect people who need that kind of protection. But they also are doing it in the service of what I consider to be kind of a noble greater good, that they are humane people. They realize, in a sense, that what they're doing, their heroics, are about making human beings more human and keeping us away from kind of these traps that, you know, that could suck us in, artificial intelligence being one of them. I know there's a lot of discussion right now in the world about its uses, its abuses, all of that kind of thing. Maybe I've just seen too many sci-fi films or something like that, but I'm pretty worried about it. I have to be honest. I think that... it's one of those things that is just going to contribute to are continuing to lose sight of the gift of our humanity, the gift of kind of living in relationship with other human beings and the sight of God. And funnily enough, this movie that has a lot of motorcycle chases and, you know, just all kinds of capers and disguises and fun stuff, it to me, it spoke to me of just the wonderful thing about being a human. So grateful.
Ah, wonderful. Our guest is Andrew Pettiprin. He's got a brand new book out, and you should check it out. It's called Popcorn with the Pope, A Guide to the Vatican Film List. Perfect Christmas gift for that Catholic film lover in your life, or maybe just a film lover who would like to check out what's on the Vatican film list and see what Catholics have to say about film. We're going to continue our conversation, but we're going to get into Christmas movies next hour. Which ones are good? Which ones are bad? Which ones have secret messages that you, well, okay, maybe we're not going to get into the ones that have secret messages that you need to be aware of. I'm not entirely sure if there are any of that sort. I don't think we'll be discussing any of the Hallmark Christmas movies as much as I would like to. I don't think we're going to, but we'll find out next hour. Catholic Answers Live.